The next case is case State of Ohio versus Wilkins. You must not have checked in because I don't have you checked.
Yes, you sure?
Sure. Okay, well, listed on my sheet. We'll be very happy to hear from you now, Ms. Ross. Thank you.
My name is Cheryl Ross, I represent the state of Ohio in this matter, and I'm here today to ask the court to reverse the decision of the Second District Court of Appeals and bring the state to the Kentucky trial court to grant the granted summary judgment in the state on both of the state's motions for relief. In this case, here's my line of important reasons for the decision. In the term of the looking for the best in the evidence, the trial court is based on the retaliation of the trial right in April 94. 2 weeks later, both men are appealing fully before the trial court and rule on the motion to dismiss. There was recipe with this condition. The case, however, 2.5 years later, on September 17th, 1996, Wilkins filed his motion for judicial relief. That petition contains none of the required affidavits for evidence outside the record. Therefore, on the 2nd of October, the state filed a summary judgment. Wilkins asked the trial court to leave to amend his decision, which was rejected, and then without the court, Wilkins filed an amended decision on November 5th, 1998, after the statute of limitations had run. The trial court following the amended summary judgment in the state was appealed. In April of 1998, the Second District Court of Appeals reversed the ruling of the trial court, finding that civil rule grants the petitioner an absolute right
why did you appeal this case? Is it just your policy to appeal everything that was against you in the lower court? Because you're going to get the same thing in this case, even if we affirm, aren't you?
Well, many reasons for
filing
an appeal in this case, based on that petitioners will be filed
well, but this case has some additional facts in it that wouldn't normally be in the regular case. I mean,
correct, Your Honor. Most typically, post-conviction relief aren't stable and sufficient from the outset.
Sure.
Most of them have a fact affidavit and have some kind of evidence outside the record. In this case, this petition was mainly existent from the start of the trial court was scheduled to dismiss the petition on its own from the very beginning to the failed to meet the requirements of the post-conviction relief statute.
In what way? Didn't have an affidavit?
Right, there was nothing. Nothing attached.
But, okay, the statute does say, and of course you want to rely on the statute as being all on its own, separate from the civil rules, I gather. And the statute itself says that a petitioner may file affidavits. It says may.
Yes, but when you look at the case law from this court and from all the appellate courts throughout the state,
has to be supported.
Right.
But here eventually this petitioner does give support. What I want to know, talk about, Ms. Ross, is your proposition of law. I think wants to suggest that a petition filed without affidavits should never be permitted to be amended. That's what it says. Cannot be amended after the time. Right.
A petitioner has a very long period of time. In this case, 2.5 years.
Granted, but nevertheless, I'm looking at the statute, and it's a couple things. It says may. It also refers to a right to amend. At A1 says petitioner may amend, and it also says at A4 it says that you may or not file affidavits, and then it says may amend.
Okay, first of all, let's deal with the affidavits. It does say may file affidavits.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the case law, the petition must include some kind of evidence outside the record. Like usually, in a right experience, has to be an affidavit. It doesn't have to be. This petition contains nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing outside the record. Second of all,
What else, other than an affidavit, have you seen outside, as evidence outside the record?
I've seen newspaper clippings and all sorts of
stuff. Oh, okay.
And the affidavit. Here, someone can sit here up and order it when you have that.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, as for the right to amend, I think that the statute presupposes that the initial petition is not fairly specific. In trying to maintain out in civil cases, I file a complaint in a civil case that just does not make a basis for a claim. It's subject to dismissal. And I can't go down one step or one step to that implementation and serve a pizza.
Yet the statute at 8.4 says a petitioner shall state in the original or amended petition all grounds for relief. It even suggests that all the grounds for relief aren't in the first petition. And that would suggest to me that its fatal deficiency is not, you're not cut off based on the statute of limitations from amending even to cure a fatal deficiency as you style it.
Well, the speaker just for a second, Your Honor, and also, if you don't...
Give me why, if you can.
In other cases, when you file a motion for summary judgment, any petition that, for whatever reason, is not sufficient,
no. Well, that I think is the part of your case you might want to be arguing, and that is that this amendment that was submitted as an amended petition might not have helped this defendant because the defendant had an obligation to respond to the motion for summary judgment, with arguably with what he instead submitted as an amended petition. With that affidavit had to be in the summary judgment proceedings.
Right. I guess my argument basically goes in two different directions. One being the fact that the state still believes that the petition has to be filed properly before the statute of limitations. Second of all, even if he has the right to do that at any time, whenever he so chooses, he still needs to, under the statute, he still needs to be reported. In this case, although the request is not obtained. So if there was no legal court to amend the petition, then there was no reason for the
What about the, could there be an abuse of discretion in that courts are required to allow amendment freely before answer?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. This, again, it's not a civil case. It's a personal case. Personal case. Personal case. Personal case.
But it is a civil proceeding. It is a civil proceeding, isn't it, counsel?
I think that there are certainly parallels, but when you look at the...
But we've held it to be a civil proceeding. PCRs are civil proceedings.
Okay.
No, Katie, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Even though they originate out of a criminal case.
Okay,
That's right. The question is 15A, the amendment back, and... What's wrong with the Court of Appeals decision that specifically says it was timely filed, that a summary judgment is not a responsive plea pursuant to the rules, and therefore it can be amended? But that's really the essence of the Court of Appeals decision and why we're here.
Okay, and that's, it says it's not a responsive plea, and that's true. But when you look at 29 District 21, that it says that the petition may be disseminated in the first year of the answer of one month. It doesn't specify what type of month. And again, it's a case where requires to be filed on the answer. And from the petition that's been filed in the first case of the split, how come the one that was over 350 petitions and we just a couple of months before the deadline? There's no way because I mean,
And what Judge Grady says with regard to that is, if as Division B suggests, talking about 2953-21, that you are talking about, a motion for summary judgment is not a motion of that kind, it does not cut off petitioner's right to amend his petition. I mean, they addressed that, so the appeal talked about that issue specifically.
I don't
think
it's a court of appeal, but I mean, it seems like a decision, but without much discussion.
What's so unfair about the court of the action that the court of appeal?
The court granted summary judgment. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
What did the petitioner file in response to the state's motion for summary judgment?
He filed a motion for leave
to file an amended petition. So he did not file anything in response to the motion for summary judgment. Okay, and that's what the court granted, summary judgment.
Yes.
And what was the basis for the state's motion for summary judgment?
There are two points in the petition. The first one, the state argued that the court's record
okay. And the petitioner here opted to file something unrelated to the motion for summary judgment, a motion to amend, and left the motion for summary judgment without a response. And that's what the court granted.
You have 2 minutes left. You may reserve that for your final question. Ms. Covington? Covington?
May I please the court? My name is Sharon Allison, and I'm here to argue in support of the decision of the court of children today. Exactly what we're talking about here, where the court of appeals was used to apply form over substance, which is basically what the state is arguing.
We kind of like form over substance, though, in summary judgment. We must have if we just took people's, vermin from their complaint, the system wouldn't work, would it? We kind of like sworn.
Yes, sir. Yeah. And I'm not here to say that the rules of civil procedure do not apply to taxes, but they do. One thing that I think needs to be noted is that in response to the state motion for summary judgment, we filed a 56F motion as in with an accompanying affidavit saying we need additional time to get the affidavit from the attorney. And we also filed this amended petition. It was in conjunction with the motion to redefine an amended petition. We added the 56F motion. So I think we did respond with regard to the 56 issue. And the
let's talk about that then. And the affidavit was, you said you needed more time to file the affidavit, yet the affidavit was attached to the amendment?
Well, what we said was we thought 56, we need more time, and we passed up to the later, we filed the actual amendment.
Except you didn't file.
Well, I think the way it was titled,
yeah.
and perhaps it was an error of counsel, and it was pretty much grouped together, that it was titled as a response and or reply to the summary judgment. But I think that the record will accurately reflect it.
Was that timely? I don't know whether you needed... The court didn't grant you the 56F, it just never responded to that either.
No response. The one thing that the court considered when the court considered the grand summary judgment, she pointed out that there is absolutely no evidence or material in this record. And I would respect that the court apparently did not have a copy of the amended petition in front of her at the time she made this statement. She did not address the issue of our motion to amend, of our 56F motion. That was ignored. What we received was a decision saying there was no evidence in this record, when in fact there really was evidence in the record.
Mm-hmm.
And the Court of Appeals looked at that and they said, well, there was evidence in the record. Let's bring in, not for purposes of letting this individual out of jail, not for purposes of granting an evidentiary hearing. The court reading is that the limited person is saying, go back and consider this affidavit. And when you consider that affidavit, at that point you can decide whether a hearing is in order. I think that's a fair result.
How do we know that the trial court didn't consider the affidavit?
Well, Your Honor, I read that on the third language in the notice of decision, which said that there was absolutely no evidentiary material before the court.
Well, even in light of the affidavit, could the court make that statement?
Well, when she referred to affidavits or evidentiary material specifically, I think it's fair to infer that she did not know that there were in the record. And in the sense of the trial court, especially in Montgomery County Common Pleas Court, clerk's office does not always promptly deliver files to the judge's chamber.
Well, what concerns me about this case, the legislature has finally decided that the defendant is only entitled to one post-conviction relief. And by allowing these amendments that are untimely filed, etc., we're just extending it. It's just doing something by the back door that they're not any longer permitted to do. And again, increase the time of the post-conviction petition. When the adversary does, the question doesn't mean anything if you continue to allow them to amend.
Well, I'm not suggesting that a person should be able to amend up until the point of final judgment. What I'm suggesting is a person should be able to amend freely as a matter of course, that it would be an abuse of discretion for a conflict not to have amendment. I'm suggesting that if the officer be able to change to file either a motion to dismiss or a motion to dismiss.
Well, if she would file a motion to dismiss, or those filing, if I would file a motion to dismiss, and that would have stopped the 15C problem.
I think it would have presented a different case before this court.
Well, that doesn't answer my question, but intentional, I understand. Are we saying now that they should file a motion to dismiss routinely in every case?
Well, and okay, what they should file an answer, if that is the response, that would stop the time only under 15. And that's what the court of appeals said.
Thank you very much. The case will be submitted. We will advise you of our decision.